It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Hey everyone, Kyle Meredith here. We're taking a few weeks off here at Kyle Meredith With, but wanted to thank you for listening in this year by sharing some of our favorite interviews from 2022. We'll be back with brand new episodes on January 6th. For now, here's my chat with Metallica's Kirk Hammett.
Yeah.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Borahe Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska, name three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 8.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks, as always, for making your way here and checking out the series. You know what to do by now. You like what you see, what you hear, hit that subscribe button. I put out three new interviews every single week, new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So it's a great way to keep up with your favorite artists and discover some new ones as well at iTunes and Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Acast, Podchaser, NPR, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcasts from. Subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. And that's me. I'm Kyle Meredith. Today, talking with Kirk Hammett. The Metallica guitarist has his debut solo EP, Portals, released for Record Store Day. We're going to hear about how it was birthed from his horror movie exhibition a few years ago and when Metallica did S&M 2. Kurt's also going to tell us about just discovering prog rock bands like Genesis, Yes, and Jethro Tull. But not being much of a fan of the Beatles, I know they're not prog, that does go together in the conversation, I promise you. Also, the possibility of eventually playing this Portals EP live, and what it means to have the very first Metallica solo release. Kirk's also going to discuss if he would ever do a guest pack solo album in the vein of Tom Morello's recent releases, future plans for The Wedding Band, which also features Robert Trujillo from Metallica, and having more time for creative projects now that he's 7 years sober. So let's do this, discussing Portals. It's Kyle Meredith with Metallica guitarist Kirk Hammett.
Hey Kyle, how's it going?
Let me say first how much I've absolutely loved listening to this Portals EP that you've done here. What a cool project. I know it's part of Record Store Day. The obvious question, how did this whole concept start?
It all came about from the need to have some music for my museum, my museum show, a horror movie poster exhibition that happened at the Peabody Museum in Massachusetts in 2018. You know, I sat down and thought I should write some Muzak-y kind of thing to be played in the background while people observe, you know, the show. And so I had this finger picking part. I sat down and 4 or 5 hours later, I had 7 or 8 different parts to it, and just within that course of time, it went from okay, I'm going to sit down and write some background music to oh my god, there's 4 or 5 parts here that are actually taking shape, and it's looking like the seed of an idea wants to be something else other than just background music. And so that eventually became Maiden and the Monster. And when I, when I was composing it, my whole idea was to kind of like, write music and arrange it so that they unfold more as like musical scenes, or musical atmospheres or moods and or feelings. So it felt like you're cycling through some sort of like, story or adventure, with various scenarios. And that's how the main, that's how Maiden the Monster kind of came about. And so I, when I finished it, I kind of sat on it and really didn't give it any other attention and just kind of like, kind of shelved it away and tried not to bring too much attention to it itself. And so for my second exhibition in Toronto in 2019, I sat down and said, all right, I'm going to try to do this again. I'm going to try and write some background music. But, I failed gloriously, and that became The Djinn. And it's just like, I was at a point of going, wait a second here. Okay, I've tried to like write something really, simple, and both of them turned out, to become two serious pieces of music. What's going on here? And I just thought to myself, well, I'll just sit on these two pieces of music and just, see what happens. And at that point, the band was getting ready to do S&M 2. And I met Edwin Outwater, who was the conductor for S&M 2. And we hit it off, literally within the first, 15 seconds of meeting each other, because one of the first things out of his mouth was, I love horror movies. Ever since I was a kid, I'm a monster kid. I'm like, me too. And then we went into, an ongoing conversation about horror movies and the horror genre and whatnot. And I said to him, hey, man, we could collaborate. I've been writing these instrumentals that are kind of horror-based. I got a ton more music. We should get together and write something. Because, I knew that he knew his horror movies. And we both talked about how much we loved the various soundtracks, to various films. And, he turned me on to a lot of, classical composers and traditional or more modern composers that had written pieces that were really, dark and eerie that I knew nothing about. And getting a long list of stuff. And I was just blown away by how great all this music was. So I said to him, yeah, we got to collaborate. He goes, yeah, let's do it. So I played them, all these bits and pieces of music that eventually became Incantation. And he just, he loved it. And, and that's how the Incantation came about. And this we started this about, I would say, about 2 or 3 months before COVID hit. And so COVID hit, and we had all this time. So what did we, what would we do? We just was like, I contacted Edwin and I said, Incantation's great. We should do something else. So I had this flamenco piece that, the band kind of didn't really show much interest in. So I showed it to Edwin. He was like, oh, this is great. We definitely do something with this. And that became High Plains Drifter. And so we had the demos to these two songs. And in the summer of 2020, we went into the studio right when things started to loosen up a bit, and people were getting vaccinated, studios were opening up. And so we went to the studio with a small chamber orchestra and recorded those two songs. And, they came out great. And so I had 4 tracks. And it was weird because, like, this was not a plan of a part of any sort of planning or anything like that, strategizing on my part, because I keep on telling every single person who I talk to, I don't take myself this seriously. I swear to God, I just don't take myself this seriously. So this just kind of happens, man. It kind of happens. And, you know, I was just like, this is great. So I went to one of our managers and I said, so I got these tunes, you know, and I played for him. And he said, oh, this is great, you know. And I said, you know, I'm interested in putting it out. He goes, okay. He, all of a sudden, you know, the next day he said, we should put it out right away. And I was like, oh, because I was expecting this to come out in like in a couple of years or something, you know, after the next Metallica album. You know, I didn't want any conflicts or anything, you know. So I was expecting it to come out like a lot later. And he said, no, it's ready. So, I mean, if it's finished, let's put it out. And then like a couple of days later, he said, if you get all the packaging done, all the notes together, sequence and everything, we can get it released on Record Store Day. And I was like, of course. Yeah. And literally we got all that stuff done and together in a week. And, you know, that pretty much brings us to this point. But, I mean, it wasn't something that I sat down and said, okay, this is what I'm going to do now. It just kind of unfolded, which is another thing that just trips me out, you know, because if I did sit down and, like, announce into the world and myself, okay, time to do a solo album, I would put way more work and effort, and there would be way more people involved, and there'd be a schedule and a lot more stress and whatnot. This didn't happen. It's just like, okay. It looks like I have a track here. Oh, it looks like I have another track. Oh, it looks like we have two more tracks. Might as well put them out because it's only a half hour worth of music. So, you know, that's pretty much how it came out, bro.
Well, I will tell you, it's, you know, I said it was fun at the beginning, and I actually meant that. I absolutely meant that. Hearing the movements, hearing this, how the titles go with the sounds, because the titles are so descriptive in there. I mean, especially when you hear see the words High Plains Drifter, and immediately, you know, I think you've talked about, you know, having Ennio Morricone as a bit of the inspiration in there, like. You feel that, and in The Gin, which, you know, was instantly, I think, the first thing I was drawn to. By the way, is there a little Beatles send up in The Gin? Everybody's got something to hide except me and my monkey. Is that on purpose? Do you hear that?
I'm not a Beatles fan, so if it's in there, then maybe it's fucking super subconscious or unconscious, you know, because I do love George Harrison playing, and I'm a big fan of all the Beatles, you know, post Beatles work. Mm-hmm. Like, I love Wings,
right?
You know, I love George Harrison solo albums, or John Lennon solo albums, and who doesn't love Ringo Starr's, you know, post Beatles stuff? It's just so cute. I'll check that out, bro.
Yeah, there's a moment. It's about 4:50 in there where you go dun 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 dun, and I thought, oh, that's so specific. But of course, it's also just chords, you know. I love that. But kind of with that in mind, you know, when you're talking about send ups, as we mentioned, Ennio Morricone, do you find that you take moments in pieces like this to kind of put those tributes in there? Like, are there any, I don't want to call them Easter eggs, but do you take those moments to kind of throw some send ups when you can?
Yeah. You know, there are definitely, you know, things that I'm paying tribute to for sure. And I'm super influenced by classical music and Prague these days. You know, I just discovered Prague, by the way. It's just like, yeah, I just never got around to listening to it. And then a few years ago, I was just like, hey, I need to start listening to this stuff, because this stuff is really cool and important and instrumental in what, you know, heavy metal is today. You know, I think definitely draw a line there, especially with the early Prague. You know, I mean, if it wasn't for that early prog, you know, heavy metal would sound different. You know, the heavy metal we know today. I sincerely believe that. But I mean, the Prague influence was huge, and you know, the classical influence has always been there. But it was the first opportunity for me to really act on it primarily. And you know, I had a real just kind of like hunger to take symphonic instruments, you know, classical instruments, and just use them in a heavier format, you know. And it's amazing because a classical instrument has the potential to be so heavy yet so beautiful. And you know, you don't really get that kind of like, you know, tonal paradox, you know, with a guitar, you know, or maybe you do, but it's you know, you really have to like, you know, it comes so naturally with like, you know, a cello or a violin, you know, a viola, and so, you know, all these songs, you know, were written with the idea of incorporating that kind of instrumentation from the very beginning. And so that's why I feel that, you know, a lot of the stringed parts, a lot of the arrangements just flow so well. It's because there's, you know, it's written with a lot of that kind of stuff in mind and a lot of space created for that kind of instrumentation.
There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always-on-the-verge-of-death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone, up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard, so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan. Additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
Did the is it a coincidence that when you talk about the Prague thing coming into your life, that I think it was just last year that you were on a Tom Morello track with Alex Lifeson from Rush?
Yeah. Well, I've always been a Rush fan, you know, but I never really listened to, like, you know, Yes, Jethro Tull, Genesis, King Crimson, you know, all those kind of affiliated bands. At one point I was just like so into Yes, it's all I listened to for like a couple of weeks, you know. It's just like I was driving everyone crazy around me, but you know, it's just great stuff, man. It's just really, really instrumental and important stuff.
And especially just how you can tell a story without lyrics. I mean, I think that's one of the most fun parts about that genre for me anyway. And especially, as I mentioned, I get that from this Portals EP as well.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, it just goes to show that you can tell a story without really relying on human language, you know, and this is like a pretty good, you know, kind of example of that, you know, being able to tell a story without really using human language. It really underlines the fact that music is universal, you know, because you listen, anyone can listen to this and get some sort of storyline out of it, you know. Think, you know, one person, you know, sitting in Oakland, California, is going to get somewhat of the same sort of, like, you know, musical messages or audio messages as someone who's sitting in, like, you know, somewhere in Nigeria or something, you know. Still get, you know, somewhat similar sort of like messages and feelings, and you know, how cool is that? How universal is that? It's like, you know, making you know, telling a tale that could be so personalized, you know, at the same time.
Well, it keeps happening all the way through it. And, you know, I haven't even mentioned the incantation. I know you did, but, I mean, it almost gets downright playful and maybe hits on more sounds than any other of the tracks, which says something. I mean, you fit so many different moods into one little song, as a little song. But, you know, it's kind of amazing how much is packed into that.
Yeah, it's dense. It's a dense tune. And, like, you know, even myself afterwards, when it ends, I just feel like, ugh. I just felt like I just went for a run or something. You know, I mean, you know, it's kind of, it, 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 it's, it's physically exerting listening to that tune, you know, because it demands so much from the listener. But, you know, at the same time, it's very rewarding, you know, I feel.
So are you going to have space in your schedule this year to do any of this live? Is there going to be a live component?
Well, I still have to figure out how to do it, you know, how to do it live. I mean, I know that all these songs could be played in a four-piece band, you know, guitar, bass, drums, and keyboards, but it would not, you know, you'd be missing all the instrumentation. You know, the way to do it would be to have a four-piece band and then a small chamber orchestra consisting of five or six members, you know, two cellos, two violins, a cello, a French horn, and a harp. And so all together, you'd have a nine-piece band. You could do it. You could play these tracks live with a nine-piece band. You know, it's definitely possible. And so, you know, so, I mean, I would love to take this on tour, and I would love to play in every place, you know, with these tunes. I just, it still remains, you know, whether or not it's feasible or not, and if enough people are interested, you know, in seeing this stuff being performed live, you know, I think it'd be pretty cool. But, you know, time will tell.
would love to see that. Does it put any more importance on this project that after 40 years, there's never been a Metallica solo project before? And so this becomes that, right?
I guess so. I mean, you know, there have been attempts in the past with not very good, you know, results. And, you know, those attempts in the past have been well documented. But, I mean, you know, things are just different now in Metallica. I mean, we're just a lot more mature, I guess, a lot more responsible, I guess. And so, you know, things like, you know, a solo album, there's just, you know, there's just a different understanding of, you know, I think the understanding nowadays is that we're all artists and we all create, and we should all, you know, have the opportunity to express ourselves and, you know, put out whatever art we want to put out to, you know, to the world. There's no reason why we shouldn't at this point. What have we got to prove? We're freaking one of the biggest bands in the world these days, you know? I mean, how can anything dilute our influence these days? You know? And so I believe, you know, putting out an album like this only makes us look better, you know? And it's not just, you know, it's just not just my solo album. I mean, you know, this album is the result of those guys' influence too. I mean, those are the guys I've been playing with for the last 40 years. I mean, you know, they're on this album as much as I am, you know, it's just subjectively, you know, not objectively, you know. I mean, come on, we're all influenced on each other when it comes to being in a band. And so there's no way around it, you know?
Well, now the seal is broken. I mean, now those opportunities are there. You know, I mentioned Tom Morello a minute ago. Could you see yourself ever doing what he's been doing lately with his records, with all the guest vocalist type of a thing?
Yeah, I could totally see myself doing something like that. But, you know, even though this is a solo project, I'm a band kind of guy. Mm-hmm. You know, I believe in the power of, you know, the four or five individuals just kind of like, you know, having a similar goal, similar vision, and really just like, you know, putting their heads down and making that happen. And, you know, I love that because it leads to results that you would never have expected, you know, and it leads down creative roads that you would never have went down by yourself. And so that's why I think, you know, being in a band and collaborating is probably the best opportunity you can have as a musician. If you do it all yourself, you know, definitely possible, you know, and you know, it's great, but it takes a lot of work. And you know, you kind of know what you're gonna get at the end of the road, you know, or maybe 60 or 70% of it, you'll know. But with a band and collaborating, you know, you never know whatever you're working on. You never know how it'll turn out, and usually it turns out for the better, you know. And so, having said that, you know, I could see myself, you know, doing something like Tom does, but in a band sort of format, you know, where it's, you know, the same people playing on each track, and then maybe, you know, subbing someone out, you know, or inviting a special guest or whatever, you know, like having Richie Blackmore play on this or whatever, you know, that kind of thing. But there being more of a band format at the same time. Kind of like Carl Santana does, you know. Yeah, when he has, like, you know, guest musicians. You know, it could be anyone. It could be guitar player, vocalist, percussionist, you know, horn player, whatever. I like that. That leads to, like, you know, more interesting results, I think. And just better collaboration. And, you know, the wedding band also, I think, is something that you know, is a cool outlet for Rob and I. And, you know, the wedding band is great in that we can refurbish the wedding band to do whatever we want. If we want to make the wedding band a 10-piece band with full horn section, you know, and 3 vocalists, you know, keyboards, whatever, to play a bunch of funk songs, we do it. If we want the wedding band to just be 4 guys just slamming it out, you know, playing a bunch of like punk songs, doing a punk medley of stuff, then we do it. You know, if something is going on in the future and the wedding band might be a good platform or vehicle for it, then yeah, sure. You know, the possibilities are endless. You know, there's no real limitations nowadays. So, I mean, you know, pretty much anything can happen. You know, I'm really into jazz fusion. Rob's really into jazz fusion. We're really into funk, you know, funk, R&B, soul, you know, all that stuff. You know, who knows what might happen? You know, Rob and I might put out a funk jazz fusion album, and that would be super, super fun, you know, for us. I don't know if it'd be fun for everyone else, but, you know, it'd be super fun for us. And so, you know, who knows? We might do it.
I want to hear it. I do.
Because we can, you know.
Right.
Because we can, and we don't have to worry about, shit, is this going to sell X amount of albums for us to even, like, survive in this fucking, you know, musical industry, fucking the way the music industry is now. We don't have to worry about that kind of stuff. We're doing it just for the art of it, you know?
Yeah, you got the wedding band, I know, is coming back and this year doing some shows, and that's fun. And, man, you got so much, too. And I saw the Knights of Lacono. Am I saying that right? The comic that's on the way, too. I mean,
Knights of Lono.
Lono, yeah. That's right. Knights Lono, yeah. Lono. I mean, seriously, you've got all of these things swirling around you. This obviously seems like a very fun time to be doing what you're doing.
It is a very, very fun time to be doing what I'm doing. And, you know, a lot of it has to do with the fact that you know, I've been sober for 7.5 years, and it's like all of a sudden I had all this more time, you know, time I used to spend at nightclubs and bars and whatnot, or recovering from that. All of a sudden I have all this time, you know, all this more time to do more cool stuff. And, you know, I've always kind of had this, like, nervous energy, you know, always feeling like I have to, like, you know, just, like, occupy my time somehow creatively. And so this is kind of, you know, the consequence of all that. And I love it, you know. I love music. I love horror films. I love surfing. I love my family, you know. What else is there for me?
If you get to do all the things you love, then you're living the best life possible. That's absolutely true.
Yeah, right there. Yeah. And, you know, when I look at it, it's you know, it's all stuff that you know, isn't too far out of reach of, you know, your normal, you know, It isn't, you know, it's a pretty normal lifestyle is what I'm saying, you know. I don't need like a huge financial resources to do, you know, what I do. I go to the beach, you know. I hang out on shutter.com, you know, and I hang out with my collection that I've been collecting, you know, forever and ever and ever and ever. And I just love it. Yeah, and it inspires me to, like, you know, do more of that kind of stuff.
I love what you're doing out there. Congratulations on Portals and everything that's going on. And Kurt, thank you so much for taking the time to talk about it. I so appreciate it.
Hey, I appreciate it just as well, Kyle, bro. Really, I do, man. And thank you. Thank you for being so kind.
My thanks to Kirk Hammett. Again, the new EP is called Portals, release on Record Store Day 2022. Big thanks to Kirk. Big thanks to you for checking out the episode. Before you get out of here, hit that subscribe button again so you can keep up with all the new interviews that's come your way every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. 3 interviews a week with your favorite artists and new discoveries as well at iTunes and Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Acast, Podchaser, NPR, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcasts from. Subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Then after that, head over to WFPK.org. That's where I do a show Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern. An hour full of song premieres, music news, anniversary spins, bonus interviews, Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on the social media spots, mostly on Twitter, also Facebook and Instagram, all 3 of them at Kyle Meredith. Do hope you like and follow along. That does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Okay, one last one, Kyle.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.